News of WFUV.
I'm going to go back to something that I think has been a part of almost all of my life, for I was 14 years old when I first discovered this through my best friend's older sister's record collection, which was a collection that I was always reading back then because she had some good things. And one of the things that she had in there was this amazing record to my ears called Mixed Bag. So, always one of my favorite songs in life, and actually in all the different times that I've heard it done, yours is kind of the virgin version that is more different than any I ever heard. Richie Havens in the studio here with us at WFUV.
There's a good reason for that.
Yeah? Tell us about it.
You know, I spent all the early part of my Greenwich Village days, the first 2 years, I was actually doing portraits and not singing. I was reading poetry and, you know, and listening. And I heard that song probably 1,000 times,
right,
done by 20 different people the same way, you know, up tempo.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I said to myself, you know, I really dislike this song. Because,
boy,
you know,
who knew?
It's a blues song, and everybody sings it like they're happy, you know?
Da,
I said, that can't be the way the guy wrote it, you know? So I said, he had to write it as a blues, so I'm going to sing it slow, like a blues. I know that's the way the writer did it. Well, I recorded it. I sang it that way. People liked it. I recorded it. And about 4 years after the record came out, someone gave me a Jesse Fuller record with that song on it.
Right.
He did it the same way everybody else did. Blew my mind. It really did. But that's how it got to be brought down.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've often thought, and I'm certainly no musician, but I've often thought that if you are going to cover somebody's music, it is great to make it your own. And you certainly did. And, you know, really, it's just my favorite version of the song ever.
Oh,
and, like,
you have heard it an awful lot
of times, you know. I was thinking this morning, as I've been thinking a lot over the past couple of weeks, knowing that after so many years of really being a huge fan of yours, I was finally going to get to talk with you. And I was thinking back of when I first discovered you. I was just talking about it before I played that from Mixed Bag. I was about 14, 67.
That's right.
It was about
the
time that Mixed Bag came out.
Yes, yeah.
And growing up in White Plains and just about to go to high school, and my best friend Kathy had an older sister, Barbara, who always had, to my tastes, the coolest record collection. In there was Jim Queskin and the Jug Band.
Oh, boy, yes.
Country Joe and the Fish with Feel Like I'm Fixin' to Die.
Oh, yes.
Freak Out by the Mothers of Invention.
Oh, yes. My buddies.
And Mixed Bag. And,
oh,
you know, with everything that was going on in the world at that time, and being young and curious, it was, for me, a listener, it was a really exciting time. But I wondered if you'd tell us how very exciting it had to be for you as one of the torchbearers, because you were.
Well, actually, before I was a torchbearer, I was exactly like you. Only I was hearing people sing live, you know, in Greenwich Village, and that was the difference for me. I mean, I came up in Brooklyn singing doo-wop music for about 8 years, you know, with all my buddies.
You were born in Bed-Stuy.
Yes, yes. And I started singing that kind of music when I was about 14 till I was almost 20.
Now, was there music in the family?
Yes. My father was an ear piano player almost his whole life. He started playing at 12.
Ear piano player?
Well, ear meaning he could play anything he heard.
Wow.
Without lessons. I mean, it was in him.
Uh-huh.
And my mother used to sing. She had a beautiful voice, but only when she was washing dishes.
Uh-huh.
And so I got to hear her
sing. And there
were,
what, 8 or 9 kids in this household?
Not yet. Not at that particular
point.
There were 3 at that point. We sort of came in spurts. I actually had 3 brothers and sisters born after I left home, which is really strange.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
Really weird. 2 families, you know, separate and very different. But my father, I think I inherited from my parents what I have, which is what I call being able to hear music well.
Right.
I had a 5th or 6th grade teacher who was a music teacher. And she was, it was around the 7th grade that she encouraged me to try to do something in music, because she used to get me in trouble all the time, because what she would do is she'd play a chord, And then she'd ask everybody to sing the notes, and no one could but me. Ah. So everybody was mad at me because I could do it, you know. And it taught me that I was hearing something that was different, you know, from the other kids. And
right, yeah.
And I just had that ability, which I blame and thank my father for,
yeah,
in that sense, you know. But that's how it all happened. And of course, me and my brother and my sister used to watch the Three Stooges. And every time they would do something, like they would go something like goodbye, 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 right, which was harmony, we'd imitate it, and we could sing in harmony, you know. But
yeah,
so we were very young.
Uh-huh.
But it's inherited.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're sitting there with that guitar, and I'm just getting itchy to hear you sing something. I'd love to have you play one for us here, Richie Havens on FUV.
Now comes the real big mystery. What's going to come to my mind? Start off easy. Gather round, people, wherever you roam. And admit that the waters around us have grown. And accept it that soon we'll be drenched to the bone. Your time to you is worth saving, then we'd better start swimming or we'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are unchanging. Come, critics, you prophesy with your pens. Don't turn your heads, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who it is naming. For the loser now may be later to win. For the times, they are unchanging. Come, congressmen, come, senators, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't block up the hall. For he who gets hurt will be he who has stalled. There's a battle outside and it's raging. It'll soon shake our windows and rattle our walls. For the times, they are a-changing. Come, mothers, come, fathers, throughout the land. Don't criticize what you don't understand. For your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. And your old road is rapidly aging. Get out the new one if you can't lend a hand. minds. They are a changing. For the times, they are a changing.
It's so great that you're sitting here doing this, you know.
Well, thank you.
It's been so many years that I've been a fan that I'm sitting here pinching myself. Is this really happening?
Thank you.
Richie Havens on WFUV. You know what I was thinking as well when I was listening to you do that wonderful Bob Dylan song? You sort of also think about the first time that you ever heard him do it. And I remember at that time, and again being just barely into my teens, how much that song made me realize and how much you have continued to feed this process, I guess. That as a person of that age, I had a voice that did matter. And it maybe was the first time that I realized it.
Yes.
Through those really important words of that song.
I think he did the same thing to me in a way. He wrote so many wonderful songs that sort of clarified things in that saying. I look at him as the great clarifier, you mm-hmm. know. He wrote songs that that sometimes had... some of the songs, especially the long ones that he wrote in the early days, each line was an entire story.
Sure enough.
And the hardest songs to learn because you would have to remember 200 stories,
mm-hmm.
basically, like mm-hmm. Hard Rain's Gonna Fall or those kinds of songs.
Right.
But he was an inclusive writer because everybody around us were in those stories. On one of those lines, anyone could identify with. So he sort of included us all, personality-wise or adventure-wise. Mm-hmm. Every kind of wise I could think of.
Yeah.
You know, we were all included.
Right.
So I thought he was an inclusive writer, uh-huh. and a wonderful poet.
Yeah. Do you remember the first time that you saw him live or the first time that you heard him?
Yes, I do. Actually, the first time I heard him play was at the, it was called, let me see if I can remember now. It was called the Gertie's Folk City.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And that was right across from where the Bottom Line is now on 4th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, I had sang Hard Rain's Gonna Fall the first time at what I called a legitimate coffee house, which was Gertie's. You could only do one song. It was a hootenanny, and I did it. And he actually came up to me, and he said that it was his favorite version. At that particular point, I had thought someone else wrote this song, the guy who I learned it from.
Wow.
And he had a little tear in his eye, you know. And he said, that was my favorite version of that song, you know. And I said, you know, but I had announced it as if, as someone else writing it.
That's amazing.
I was terribly embarrassed
to find out that
he had written
that
it.
That sort of goes to show how new it all was at that point, that nothing was really defined, and that you were all almost equals on the stages down there.
We were, for sure.
Would you consider playing live for us one of the songs from Mixed Bag?
Sure.
Yeah? You want to... you do remember everything that's on here.
Well, I remember some of them. I have so many albums, I don't remember what is on anymore.
Richie Havens is our guest in the studio.
Let's see. Okay.
Cool.
Oh, we did that one. You played it on the record. Let's see. Okay, I'll try. Oh, there's one.
Okay. Richie Havens on WFUV live in Studio A.
up in the sky. And I wonder if she looks down as she goes on by. Well, she is flying so free and easy in the sky. Oh, Lord, look at me here. I'm rooted like a tree here. Got to sit down, can't cry. Oh, Lord, I'm gonna die blue. Dying blue. Now the sun, it comes up and it lights up the day. And when he gets tired, Lord, he goes on down his way. To the east and to the west, he meets God every day. Lord, look at me here. I'm rooted like a tree here. Got to sit down, can't cry. Oh, Lord, I'm gonna die blues. Die blues. She lived down by the mine. Ain't she never, no, she's never, never stopped trying. Then one day, my woman up and died. Oh, Lord, she just up and died now. She just up and died. Well, she wanted flying me. The only way to fly is die, 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 die. High flying bird, flying way up in the sky. And I wonder if she looks down and she goes on by. Well, she's flying so free and easy in the sky. Oh, Lord, look at me here. Rooted like a tree here. Got to sit down, can't cry. Oh, Lord, I'm gonna die blue. Got to sit down, can't cry. Oh, Lord, I'm gonna die blue.
Wow, Richie Havens in the studio, High Flying Bird, which is something that most of us heard the first time on Mixed Bag a long time ago. And when I said, I know that they can see it anyway, even though they're not sitting here, because of what you do sound-wise. And I wonder, you know, I think almost every time I've seen you, you do that kind of energy that gets everybody involved, which is pretty much the point, I think.
Gets me involved.
Yeah. But when you were on, one time when you were on Johnny Carson.
Oh, yeah.
Did you not get the audience so enthusiastic?
It was the first time I was there.
What happened?
It was strange because it was the Vietnam War days, and I had a song that I was singing called Handsome Johnny at that time, which was written by Lou Gossett. Up to a certain point, and then he came to me and said, I wrote a real folk song, and he gave it to me. He said, it's an anti-war song. And he gave it to me, and it was up to Dunkirk.
Mm-hmm.
So I added Korea and Vietnam and and Birmingham and a couple of other things in there. And so I recorded it also on that album, Mixed Bag.
Great song.
And I went to the studio because what they did was they called you up and they said, come early so we can do a rehearsal. And I went and I sang that song. Then I thought, after I had done it and committed that that's what I was going to do, why did I do that? Because all of these people who come on this as an audience is all these Midwestern people that just get tickets outside the door, and they're going to boo me right off the stage.
Well,
because that was what we thought.
Yeah.
We thought, we were taught that the Midwest was really like the burbs, the real burbs, and the sticks and whatever, and that they were very different, but...
And none of the people running the show, like censors or whatever, like
they
that,
didn't
had
say
any
anything.
Problem?
No, they didn't say anything to me, and I went on, and that night I really expected to not have a really good reaction. What happened was that everybody stood up at the end of the song, and they wouldn't stop clapping, so I think it was the first time Johnny grabbed his pencil and started beating on the desk. And that he was just sitting there going and waiting for everybody to stop, and they wouldn't. So he said,
"Fantastic.
We're going to go to commercial. We'll be right back." And he cut off. When he came back, they were still clapping. So he said, "Richie, sing another song." So I got to sing two. I was only supposed to sing one, but I got to sing another one, after which they wouldn't stop clapping. So he said, "Richie, you know what? I'm going to ask you to come back tomorrow night."
Damn.
And so I went back two nights in a row, and then he told me, he said, "You're the second person that I've asked to come back here two nights in a row. The other one was Barbara Streisand, but she couldn't make it the first time."
I know, when I read the story, I was amazed. This happened to two people, Richie Havens and Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, it was amazing to me, and I just didn't, I was so taken aback that you could actually see it on my face. When they started clapping, I was like shocked.
Right.
I didn't know what to do. Get up. Because we weren't even going to talk, you know, I wasn't even supposed to go sit down and talk with him. I was just going to do the song. He was going to say that was Richie Havens.
Yeah.
Couldn't get off of that.
As they say, man, you made it to the couch on Johnny's show, you know.
It was great.
What year was that?
That was 67, actually.
67,
Or maybe early 68, when the album had just come out.
Time of great division in this country over that war that was happening at that time.
You know, I later learned that there really wasn't as much division as we may have thought, in that I think... people began to understand that it was their sons and daughters that were going to it, even in the Midwest, you know?
Even
though there might have been a gung-ho feeling about America being the bestest in the world, you know, in that sense, that there was something not correct about the Vietnam thing itself, the whole operation. And it turns out, of course, it was never declared a war, and it was a sort of a personal agenda of a few people in the government. And so we protested against the right thing.
Yeah.
In the end, we were correct.
And I guess even as you say, as surprised as you were when you think of, at that time, standing up and singing that song on national television and getting the response that you got from the audience alone, well, agrees with exactly what you just said.
Yes, yes, it surprised me, for sure.
Yeah?
I didn't expect that, but I tell you, I really didn't.
Yeah.
Thought they were going to just go...
or troublemaker, or... You have a way of getting people going, which I'm sure that you've seen in all the years that you've been doing it.
I've been on stage every weekend all year round since I started, and that's a wonderful thing to be able to
do. You've been around the world like 28 times or something?
Or more.
Yeah.
28 times or more.
You learn
a few things, you know. And you know, I think the most things I've learned really is that the world in and of itself is trying to get to where we were trying to get to as well.
Still,
you know, and I think we've totally arrived as far as I'm concerned, because now I had this experience about 5 to 8 times a year in the last 4 or 5 years, where a teacher would say, "Would you come and sing for my kids in school?" And then I say yes. And then I get there, and they're so young, and I go, "Ugh, what am I going to sing?" You know, every song I know is so heavy and so, you know. And I get in there, I try to fake it. I try to go, "Here comes the sun," and "Kumbaya." And then I find out, you know, they don't want to hear that. You know, I had one, I was in a, this is so funny, I was in a classroom, in an auditorium, and they were middle school, you know, just below and up to middle school. And one kid yells out, "Sing like a virgin." And she was about 5 or 6. And I went, well,
I guess you weren't dressed for it.
I learned my lesson. You know? I don't know that one, but I tell you what, I'll sing it. But what I find out really is that especially now, is that these kids understand every song that I would sing for any grown-up, you know, especially in the last 5 years. They understand it completely and turn out to be the ones I wish were around in 1960.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that the people I would have been singing to then.
Right, yeah.
They are so wise and they are so sharp. And as far as I'm concerned, there isn't a dud in the bunch, as far as I'm concerned. It's just our sense of the big guy versus the little guy, you know, in that sense, you know, but they're way ahead of us,
I'll
tell you that.
Not always speaking to them like
that's
we
right.
are in that position
right.
of bigger, older, therefore well, wiser. It's not always the case.
It was never the case.
Right.
I tell you the truth, we acted as though we knew something, you know, and our parents did as well. I mean, not the universal things, but the senses that we were probably looking for as kids as to our times, you know, in that sense, and to see what kind of reactions our parents would have to certain news on the radio, and if they reacted at all. And in the 50s, most parents would not have believed that America would have done all of the things that they were doing or would continue to do. That was not kosher. Yeah, that's a good word for it. You know, but they, you know, we learned together. I think after a certain point, we learned together. I think that the whole 1970s was what I call the saturation period, you know, where everything we had done in the 60s got out to the those outposts and was heard because of FM radio. And was felt as well, you know. I later, tell you the truth, when I started to really travel in the 70s to a lot of the universities in the Midwest, I was always told to expect it to be
a little, you know, conservative.
A little conservative, you know. And I would arrive at a university and the faculty would immediately have a party, sort of kind of introduce me to the faculty that was sort of part of the show. And I would end up at somebody's house whose son had a great black light basement going on, you know, with all the posters and all of the psychedelics. And I would hear conversations that I would not dream of ever hearing on the East Coast, for instance. You know, most of the faculty was going, yeah, well, you know, my kids, you know, they were tampering around with that marijuana stuff, and I talked to my doctor, and he said, well, if you don't know what it is, try it yourself, and then you'll understand, and I did, and it isn't all of that cracked up to me, you know. I mean, this is what I was hearing.
Right.
In those days, and it blew my mind. I found out that the Midwest was so more far advanced than either coast, and the reason was, they moved away from the coast to get to the Midwest to raise their families the way they wanted to. And not only that, but to have the chance to actually do that, raise them in the first place.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's still the same. I think we're now evened out a little bit, on, you know, across the board. But it took the whole 70s to do it.
Yeah. It was a big job, an important one.
It was.
An ongoing one.
Saturation. And the Woodstock movie had a great deal to do with it, too. I think that the movie, there were two things in that film that I think either the number of people who were there would scare some people to death in the Midwest because they thought, oh, the world's gone now, or there were two people in the movie or several people in the movie that enlightened their own constituency. One was the elderly lady who was talking about the kids camping on her property, and they're so nice, you know, these kids are so great, and leave them alone, they're not bothering anybody.
Right.
And then there was the guy, the New York Times guy, talking to the policeman, and he said, well, what do you think about this? And the policeman said, what do I think about what? They're having a good time. They're not bugging anybody, and you know, so there's a few of them are smoking or whatever, he says, but they're not bothering anybody. This is great. And he says, that's kind of strange coming from a policeman. He said, no, I'm the chief of police. And that, in the movie, was the biggest hit we could have ever had.
Exactly, you know?
So it sort of, de-radicalized us in, mm-hmm. in that sense, because yeah. that's what they were doing in the first place, you know, is trying to separate us from who they would have liked to remain in right. control, yeah. you know, in yeah. that sense, you know.
Something like that encourages just that statement from him a lot more
yes.
peace than the opposite, yes. you know. Would you play another song for us here?
Sure.
Richie Havens in the studio at WFUV.
Thousand roads that get there, and each one looks the same. And with every step we're thinking, should we have gone the other way? There are those who think and give direction, even though they lost themselves. And those who finally get there never leave no trace of a trail. So if you're searching for some peace of mind out in a world that is cold and unkind, hoping someone will show you a sign. Paradise is a hard place to find. There are wise old men who'll tell you that it's up there in the sky. But I've flown up there in jumbos, and believe me, it's a lie. There are those who think it's here and now, what you do with every day. We better make the best of living, we're gonna die for sure someday. Searching for some peace of mind out in a world that is cold and unkind, hoping someone will show us a sign. Paradise is a hard way, paradise is a hard place, paradise is a hard place, hard place to find. I'm not trying to be no prophet, I'm not trying to change your mind, but I think that this searching is such a waste of time, such a waste of time. There are those who give, have religion, teach them how to live each day. Yes, they believe in paradise, all you've got to do is pray. But me, myself, I'm easy, I don't really have to know. Just as long as I'm still breathing and I've got somewhere to go. Searching for some peace of mind out in a world that is cold and unkind, hoping someone will throw us a line.
Paradise is a hard place. Paradise is a hard place. Paradise is a hard place. Hard place to find.
That's a beauty. Richie Havens in the studios here at WFUV, and listening to that reminds me also that for all the different things that you have stood up for and brought attention to, the environment certainly is one of the big ones for you.
Yes.
Would you play us another song?
Ooh, let's see. Oh Lord, it's not a long, long way to go. All you need is a bit of reflection. Jets might seem like changing direction right now. Don't go around taking up no collections on your way down. There's nobody left to crown. What if politicians were all good guys? Oh Lord, don't we wish they were? Wouldn't that be so dependent? Courts of law that make us all feel like defendants sometimes. Freedom, we've got to amend it.